return you now to your regularly scheduled program.
Hey everybody, this is Josh Martin.
And I'm Marty Hite.
Hey, how you doing?
Welcome to the Tattoos and Jesus Podcast.
I am very happy to be here!
Here at TNJ, we seek to blend the righteous with the ridiculous.
Please explain.
We discuss coffee, counseling, Christianity, and whatever else crosses our mind.
We hope you enjoy.
Okay, let's go.
Welcome back, everybody. Just got choked on my mint.
That's what you get for welcome, trying to eat mints.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of TNJ, Tattoos and Jesus, out here on this beautiful May. Is it May? May the 4th be with you? No, May 2nd.
May the 2nd be with
but
you.
But it drops on May the 4th be with you.
Oh, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
What is, so that's, what is that, Star Wars Day?
Yeah, never watched Star Wars, so I don't
what
know
is your
anything.
You, me neither. Okay, so I've seen some Star Wars, but not like, I'm not a fan. What is your favorite Star Wars anything for not being a fan?
So we went to Disney World last year, and the Star Wars land had a really good pita hot dog.
Pita hot dog?
Yeah. It was Star Wars themed something, and it was pretty good. But I don't know if that was because I was absolutely starving or if it was just tasty. But
do you remember how much the pita hot dog cost?
$7. Me and my brother-in-law split it.
Was it big enough to split?
Yeah, it was pretty big.
So
in the movie, though, the only thing that really pops in my mind is Chewbacca.
Chewbacca? Ooh, what was that?
Yeah, the big hairy guy.
See, I think of Jabba the Hutt.
Which one's that one?
The really big fat guy. He's like a giant mush.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? It's like 800 pounds.
Ugly looking guy.
Yeah, he just looks like melted skin.
Yeah, okay.
I actually used him in a sermon series. I've talked about, you know how I've talked about my affinity to Ehud in Judges?
Yeah.
And, like, they talk about he was a very fat, well, Ehud wasn't, but the king that Ehud slays was a very fat man.
Right.
And so, in the sermon, I put up a picture of Jabba the Hutt, because it says that he literally, he stabs the king, and his dagger disappears into the flesh.
And you thought about Jabba the Hutt.
I thought about Jabba the Hutt.
That's
I mean, there's
fair.
A couple people I thought about, but I thought it'd be rude to put in, like, real pictures.
Yeah, that probably wouldn't be the best.
So I went Jabba the Hutt. People would appreciate that.
Yeah. We're also on episode 98.
Is this episode 98?
Two more weeks. Big 100. I'm going to quit next week.
Episode 99, we are done. That really would be kind of funny. I have a question. How do you feel about Burger King?
Second favorite fast food restaurant of all time.
That is the stupidest answer I've ever heard.
Taco Bell's number one. Burger King.
Are we making a list of like what restaurants are going to kill us quickly?
No, I'm just fast food restaurants. Burger King is like top of the top, man.
How do we define fast food in your world?
Drive-thru. I had this conversation literally like 20 minutes ago.
So if there's a drive-thru, it's fast food? So you're talking about if we go to the clock down here,
I mean, you got to be reasonable. Fast food is drive-through.
Goodwill has a drive-through. Does that make it like fast donation?
More drive-through than sit-in.
More drive-through than sit-in?
Dine-in. That probably makes more sense.
Is Sonic fast food?
There's probably more people that go through the drive-thru or 50% of their clientele hits the drive-thru compared to dine-in.
That's what makes it fast food.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Is Chick-fil-A fast food?
Yeah.
And it's not. It's quick service. And they don't like it when you call them fast food.
Well, they're fast food. And they're my fourth favorite chicken restaurant. But
fourth favorite chicken restaurant?
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway.
Burger King.
Right.
How did Burger King become number two?
It's delicious. Number one. Number two. The only time I played rec league baseball was for Burger King, and I got free Whoppers every time I wore my baseball jersey. We lost every single game but one, and the one game we won, I was sick. True story.
That gives you no reason to enjoy Burger King.
True story. I did get free Whoppers with a jersey, though.
That's legit.
But no, I think it's the tastiest combination burger fry.
No shot.
Fast food.
When's the last time you had Burger King?
I don't know, probably a couple of months ago.
Okay, I had it last night.
You don't have luck with fast food, number one. We've already established.
Can we just say I did not go caring on anybody? I didn't go caring on anybody. I wanted to.
Your standards are high for fast food, I feel like.
My standards are I don't want to wait for 20 minutes when I'm the only car there.
Was that Burger King?
Yeah.
Okay, hear me out. Okay, hear me out. This is the thing.
My wife and I agree. It's more instead of Burger King, it was more like Burger Jester.
If we weren't recording, I'd have walked out of this room right now. So, I'm going to go ahead and highly doubt that Ashley was a part of that joke. It was more of you said it, and she just kind of laughed at it.
No. She participated. She was part of it. Promise. It was uncannily unlike her. It was very much more in my wheelhouse of humor.
Yeah.
But she was there for a minute.
She must have been tired or something.
Yeah.
So, each city usually has two Burger Kings. This is a theory of mine.
Oh, my goodness. Is this like the Mattress Firm theory?
One is always on point and delicious, and one is absolutely slow and trash.
Okay.
And I found that's mostly true for most cities.
Why do you think they have two then?
That's what I'm saying.
One should close.
They're more location-based.
So what Burger King would you go to around here? What's your go-to?
The one off Asheville Highway, slow as Christmas.
Okay.
The one near Chesney, off of the exit?
Yeah.
Solid? Off across from QT. I don't know if it's still open, but three times I've went there, it was solid.
It was good.
Gaffney, Boulevard, slow as Christmas. Hyatt Street connect to the gas station, fast and efficient.
I did not know you knew so much about Burger King.
You didn't know what you were opening up right now?
No.
My picture also hung in the Burger King on Hyatt Street, but go ahead.
Your picture?
My picture.
Is it still there?
Baseball team. They threw it away. I went and asked for it because they were remodeling and they said they had already thrown it away.
How long ago was that?
3 years.
How long had it been up there?
Since I was in sixth grade.
Good gravy.
Because that was the first year it ever established a team. We were the first Burger King team in Gaffney.
Burger King team. Well, last night, my wife and I, my son had a soccer game.
Mm-hmm.
First game of playoffs, he played Newberry. All right, so we are just like, you know what, we'll pick up some fast food on the way and just eat it when we get to the game. And so between here and Newberry, there's nothing. You get off the exit for Newberry, there's nothing.
Mm.
Right across from the stadium is a Burger King. Right across from the high school is a Burger King. And so like we looked and like there were some other restaurants further up, but it was almost time for the game to start. There's a Burger King right there. My wife has a soft spot in her heart for Burger King because she ate a lot as a kid. And we were like, we never eat Burger King. So we're like, let's just go grab a Whopper. There's nobody here. So we pull up, third car in line. They order. We pull up. The other cars are gone. It's just me. Order three burgers, two fries, and two drinks.
Did you get cheese at it or did you
just... With cheese.
Okay.
With cheese.
That's the tricky part about Burger King. But go ahead.
I went cheese all the way down. So my wife got a double. Charlie got a junior Whopper, and I just got a Whopper. Three medium fries. Two Cokes. We pull up, and the game starts at 6. It's like 5:58. But we're it. We're the only one. And I told her, I said, watch this crap. It's going to be 6:30 before we get to this game. Walked in at 6:25. So we pull up, we pay, and sure enough, just like freaking Hardee's, they go, yeah, can you please pull up and wait for your food? We're the only ones there. But I'm like, yes, ma'am, no problem. I pull up. After like 15 minutes, they bring out our food. To their credit, it was warm and fresh. Fries were popping, probably why we had to wait. But they only gave us one drink. I said, hey, ma'am, we're missing a drink. She goes, what are you missing? I said, we're missing a small Coke. She says, a Coke? I said, yes, a Coke. She goes, so you need a what size Coke? I said, a small Coke. She said, a Coke? I said, yes. She said, I'll be right back. She disappears for 8 more minutes. 8 minutes! And then a man walks out, and he goes, here, I'm sorry about that. And he hands me a drink. And I said, is this a Coke? And he said, yeah, it's a Coke. And I look down, and it's a Sprite.
Did you take the Sprite?
Ashley goes, it doesn't matter. We're leaving. And I said, it's probably freaking carbonated water. Nobody ended up drinking it.
Nobody tasted it?
She tasted it, and she's like, I think it's a Sprite, but I'm not really sure what this is. So they just split the Coke, Charlie and Ashley did. I don't drink soda, so I didn't want anything. And so we ended up throwing it away. 20 minutes? Here's the other issue. Like, growing up, I haven't had a burger in I don't know how long. I used to get their chicken sandwiches. You know those, like, oblong chicken sandwiches? They're pretty delicious. I didn't have one of those last night, so I can't compare it. But I had a Whopper. It was good. It was fine. I'll eat it again. It was okay. It wasn't the best hamburger, but it was solid. Here's my issue. They've changed their fries.
What do you mean?
They've changed them. It's not the fries I grew up with.
What are the fries?
I grew up with were thinner. These were like fat ones.
Yeah, the fat ones are good.
They're disgusting.
You have lost your mind.
They were not better.
You have lost your mind. Still crispy, still fresh, still delicious.
They were crispy and fresh. I'll give you that. But there was too much. A fat fry has too much potato goo in the middle.
I mean, I agree with you. I'm here for the, there's a good balance. McDonald's, super skinny, really good, but could use a little more meat on the
just
balls.
A little. I don't know how I feel about Wendy's fries either.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge fan of theirs. And I'm not a huge, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm not a huge fan. Zaxby's fries are good, but I don't like the crinkle fry really. It's kind of a fat fry. It's got too much potato goo in it. You got to use a lot of sauce.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like Cookout. Cookout is either really, really spot on or really, really trash.
But if I had to choose, I would choose a skinny fry over a fat fry.
That's fair. I would agree.
And Burger King's fries have gotten too fat.
You think so?
I'm telling you so.
Well, I've had them in the past couple months, and they're still delicious.
They were not delicious.
You have me craving Burger King. You did not do well at selling me on Burger King's trash. I literally would go right now and get a burger and fry.
I mean, a Coke. I would too. I'm not turning it down. But I'm not compelled to go back.
Me and Sarah did a burger fry Coke battle one day.
Okay.
Did I ever tell you that?
No.
We went to Burger King, McDonald's, and Cookout.
Okay.
We got a double cheeseburger, only ketchup, a fry, and a Coke from each place.
Did each of you eat one individually, or did you split it?
We split them.
So that you weren't eating three burgers, and did a taste test.
Okay. So what we did is we went, we did a taste test of all the burgers, all the fries, all the Cokes, and ranked them.
All right,
took an overall ranking score.
All right, where do you put it?
Burger King, Cookout, McDonald's is how it fell.
Burger King, Cookout, McDonald's?
Because, hear me out, the Cookout's fries were on point that day.
Okay.
If it was a soggy mess, McDonald's would have had it. And McDonald's Coke is either the best of the best or the worst of the worst.
There's no in between.
No, it's not. Yeah.
I'm trying to think. So here's my problem. I don't put Cookout in that category because they're kind of in a land of their own. It's like I have a hard time. I guess they are fast food. They are. But not in the traditional, like, you get a bag as a sandwich, fry, medium drink. Like, there's a very, like, Cookout's got this whole tray thing going. You can do, like, hush puppies aside. You can do a quesadilla as a side. The beef quesadilla is the best. No questions. Not even up for debate.
Okay.
They don't feel like to me, when I think of fast food, burger fry, you think McDonald's, Wendy's, Burger King. Hardee's could go there. They're kind of they're a lower level, but they're there. That's the same deal. If you got West, you got Whataburger, In-N-Out Burger's kind of there, but Are there any other tried and trues? Well, I guess Carl's Jr. is the Hardee's version out west. Are there any other tried and true just burger fry places?
I don't think so. Not burger fry places.
I'll say, like, growing up, it was always Wendy's for me.
Wendy's is good. It was just too far down Highway 9.
Wendy's burgers are good.
Wendy's burgers would probably be the best of the burgers.
Yeah.
Even though Burger King.
Hardee's has a good burger.
Burger King's so good, though.
Hardee's has a good burger.
It does. It's, last time I went to Hardee's, I went to this one down the road.
Yeah.
It was actually this time last year because I was on my way to the beach. And it cost me like $12.
Yeah. I don't know. It's up for debate. It's there. It comes down to what you said. Is it fresh and is it on point that day?
Yeah.
Fresh, being fresh and crisp is really the make it or break it. Like, I love a Big Mac, but a cold Big Mac with soggy fries, disgusting. And I think that's the problem, is the food is so nasty, realistically, that you have to get it at its prime for, like, the pros to outweigh the cons.
That's fair. That's fair.
Because there's been times I've got, like Hardee's fries, and it's almost like, I feel like they're like gushers, but they're like grease gushers.
I love gushers.
Do you like it when you eat a fry and you feel like you just get a mouthful of liquid Crisco?
No, that sounds terrible.
Exactly. It was awful. Too greasy.
Growing up, did you ever work in fast food?
I worked at Chick-fil-A for 6 years, but that's quick service as we've established.
So, when you worked for Chick-fil-A,
yeah,
what did you do?
What did I do?
What was tech? I don't want a huge breakdown. Just like a job title.
I evolved. I went from just frontline worker, the person who takes the order, bags the food, to like a shift manager, where I was kind of like the lead of the minions, and then I became a manager where I actually organized. Like, I was the head of, while I was there, I was in charge, counted money, did tills, dealt with difficult clients, made sure the front and back were running smoothly. So I did it all.
All right, so. All right, so this reminds me of a song. There's a song by Dave Matthews called Dancing Nancy's. If you don't know Dave Matthews.
Nancy's.
That's a shame. But he has a song called Dancing Nancy's. Whole song's about what ifs.
Okay.
He sings about what if he was, and he names all these different people, jobs. You ever thought what would have happened if you would have stuck at Chick-fil-A?
I actually was propositioned to pursue operatorship there.
Mm-hmm.
So Chick-fil-A has a weird structure where you don't own them. You're just the operator. But it's as if you own them. But Chick-fil-A holds exclusive ownership rights to all their restaurants. And so if you're not fulfilling your roles, they can actually come in and they basically just fire you. It's not that easy, but that's the way it works. Whereas, like, McDonald's, for example, you own the franchise. And so it's just a little different of a structure. But yeah, I was actually approached by my operator to gauge my interest at if I would be interested in pursuing that.
Now, and that's where but to do that, don't you have to do like a, you got to go open new ones?
Yeah, well.
And bounce around
for
a little bit first.
You got to remember, This was 20 years ago, 15.
So it might have been as a robust.
It wasn't the same process, but you're right. There were hoops. So there was no guarantee that I would have been granted that opportunity. It's not, they have a more formal structure now, but yes, you have to jump through some hoops to prepare you for that. That is fair.
Because I did an interview for a manager position one time.
And
he
Chick-fil-A?
Explained it in Gaffney, and
he's a good guy.
He explained it to me, and he mentioned kind of the process you were talking about. And as far as like an operator goes, it was like that, where it's like you go through this program, you open up a couple of Chick-fil-A's, you help run it, and then they put you up for operator at whatever.
So back then, what I saw frequently happen is, if you want to be an operator, they would go make you do some openings so you could be part of some grand openings and what that looked like. Then they would go and place you at different level stores. So whatever store that you were at, that one's already taken care of. Like, you've already learned, like, they want you to do some management there. And, like, okay, so you've already kind of figured out how that works. Then they're going to go put you at a really high-performing store so that you learn, like, how to operate at a really highly functional level. And then they may go put you at a third type of store, maybe a more rural store, or maybe one that does a ton of catering, right? And so they're just going to give you a couple different looks. And then what happens is they frequently would have interim managers or interim operators. And so, for example, my operator actually had to step down, right? There was some issues that happened, some disagreements between him and corporate office, and they basically said, you can either choose this or you can choose Chick-fil-A. The choice is yours. He handed them his keys, and he was out, right? And so they need a replacement. And so what they did is they took somebody, I forget his name now, and they put him in as a temporary operator. And so that was his next step in getting a store. So he had already had experience across the platform. And so now this is your store. You run it, and if it's yours, but really it's just an opportunity. And he got probably a lot of tutelage, a lot of assistance in doing that. But it kind of, you know, cut his teeth in learning how to run a store. And then I think once they find the permanent operator for that store, who's still there today, Peace Haven Road, at least I believe he is, last time I checked. Anyway, then from there, the guy was actually placed at his store.
So, what made you leave?
What made me leave? It wasn't my...
Wasn't your cup of tea?
No, it wasn't that. Like, because I ended up working at a Chick-fil-A when I was in grad school in downtown Columbia. I was about a block from the State House. It was a really cool kind of niche store. There was no drive-thru. It was part of a hotel. It was actually really cool. But that wasn't my pursuit. Like, it wasn't really on my mind. and going to school and stuff, like, in my head, I was like, I've got other dreams and aspirations for myself.
Was counseling always your...
No.
I guess, like...
Looking back, I wonder what could have been if I would have stayed. I think I would have been a good operator.
Okay, so what...
I'd be a little more clean cut with a little less tattoos, but
yeah,
I think I could have really done well.
So if you, because there's, all right, so there's two routes in my head that we're going right now.
Mm-hmm.
One is, I'll just let you answer either one of them. How many different jobs have you ever interviewed for? That's number one. Number two is, if you could do any job, not saying that you don't enjoy what you do, not saying that what your calling is now. Yeah. All that off the table, just in general. If you could do anything that you feel like maybe you wanted to do always, or a dream job or something that mm-hmm. you feel like would be cool and that you would be good at, what would that be?
So do you really want to know, like, every job I've ever pursued?
Well, no, I just want to know a number. Like, because in my mind I'm thinking, for me, I've had a lot of job interviews.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of like...
And like, what if it would have stuck?
Like, what if I would have took that, played it out, yeah. Where would I be? What if I took that, played it out, where would I be? What if I got that and played it out, where would it be? Like,
yeah.
I'm just thinking in the sense of, like, overall. Because I think everybody kind of does this to a certain extent.
So there was the Chick-fil-A opportunity. That was a big one. When I left grad school, I didn't really interview for a lot of jobs because my internship became a job.
Right.
And so I kind of just moved into. And so I've always been a path of least resistance kind of guy. Like, when it's time to make a decision, I just kind of see what is in front of me. And if there's a path of least resistance. And so they were like, hey, we like you. This internship, it worked out. Would you like a job? This guy's leaving. To me, it was like, well, I need a job. This is a full-time job. Just go. Just take. And so I've almost always just, if an opportunity presented and if it was at a time that I needed to make a change and it seemed to fit within my skill set, I just did it. I've never been one that just chased opportunities. There's only been a couple times that I feel like I kind of chased or kind of looked into all other things, and it never worked. It actually has never worked for me. I've never been the guy that chased after something insecure. Like, for example, a couple jobs ago, I was working as a drug and alcohol counselor at a local facility, and I was really burnt out, or I was ready to change, and I started chasing opportunities. I actually looked at leaving counseling altogether, going into full-time ministry. That fizzled out, never turned to anything. I interviewed as like a grief counselor. I was going to be an in-home hospice counselor or something. Never got a call back after that interview. I reached out to a few people, cried on the phone with this one lady, probably traumatized her. I didn't even know. I didn't even see it coming. I was just really upset. And she was just like, "Wow, Marty, I'm sorry to hear that. I'll call you if I hear of anything."
Yeah. See, that was like, that was this, one she marked off.
All right. To this day, when I see her name pop up, I'm like, I wonder if she remembers that. Because it was so embarrassing.
Probably.
But then when I took my job for mental health, it was the supervisor there, or the site director. She knew I was looking, and she knew me, and she pursued me. She said, "Marty, this would be a great, like, please come work here." So again, it was an open door. Like, and so to me, it was like, I have never really chased. It's just been situations have unfolded, and I just took that next step. I never really was like, this is what I want to be, and it's just like, push all the push all the chips in and just go for it. I mean, have you ever done that?
Well, it's kind of a combination of what you just described, where it was like opportunity presented itself to better or to go a different route to career advancement, whatever. I took it. But then I also, like, become discontent in a couple jobs at Chase.
Yeah.
But then there's this balance of, like, or there's this, like, in a way, this is not to say I'm leaving tomorrow from Envision, but in a way it's like, what am I missing out on?
Yeah.
Currently, and I've done this with all of my jobs, like, am I content here? Mm-hmm. What am I? And it doesn't happen all the time.
It's like,
it just
am I
comes
content
up.
Or am I complacent?
Right. It just comes up. Like, what am I missing out on? Am I sell myself short? Am I doing all that I can to advance what I got going?
Yeah.
And so, I've interviewed for a lot of different. Like, I interviewed and was offered a Waffle House manager job. Went and did like a weekend training where I ran like a shift. Red Bull. I had textile management. I interviewed for Brown's Packing as like a going around and collecting like the grease.
Oh.
And like being like over like that. And the Miracle Heal was an opportunity at one point. Like, I was at the methadone clinic. Like, it's just like a lot of different ones. It's bounced through my mind. But I don't really know. It could be a could be the ADD, I mean, to be honest. We talked about, you know, just inattentive and wanting to jump.
Which, yeah,
I manage that for the most part. But
I here's the thing.
I don't know.
When I look at you, though, I think you struggle to do a whole lot of one thing. Like, I think you like diversity in a job because you need your mind to be engaged in different areas.
Yeah. Which is why I think I really enjoyed, in a weird way, my supervisor job, because I was really good at
the mill.
Yeah, I was really good at managing people because I was fair, mainly. And then like having all these different things come up, and like scheduling and inventory, like all these different things. I think you're on point with that. Whereas like I got all this going on, and I can do it well. All at one time.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it was third shift. I worked 6 days a week, so I hated my life. So, there's that. But, yeah,
do you think
point.
If it would have been first shift, like a 5 days, you may not have left?
No, I think I still would have left.
Okay.
I don't think textiles, because I'm the type of person that, even if I'm good at it, it will keep me for a little bit. But if it's not what my heart is in, it won't keep me long. Because
that's my struggle. Is there's things I'm good at. But I also have this deep need to feel like I'm connecting with people and making a difference in the world.
Impactful, yeah.
Impactful. And, yeah. And don't get me wrong. Like, you're impactful in those jobs. But there's just, if you do, like, personality inventories, like, there's there's a category for this.
Yeah.
And that's why people end up being, whether it be ministers or social workers or counselors or nurses, doctors, like there's a certain quality that some people possess that like that's what drives them to that type of work, because it just itches that scratch in a little different way, or scratches that itch.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, yeah, that's pretty spot on. So
I've kind of always had this philosophy. I can't back it up biblically. I can only say kind of experientially it's been true for me, and I may have said it on the show before, but I have found that before I can take an opportunity, and I see this in other people too, I have to become discontent with where I am,
mm-hmm,
in order to be open to what might be.
Yeah.
Because when I'm content, when I'm happy, I don't look for other opportunities. I'm not looking.
Right.
Right? Like I'm not even, my eyes are not open. Somebody would have to chase me down because I'm happy. I'm doing my thing. But what I have consistently found is that something muddies the water for me. Something makes me discontent, whether it be a passion not pursued,
yeah,
or problems, right?
I've, yeah,
worked at a lot of places where problems existed to the point that I was like, I don't know if I can keep working here under these conditions. And so, and in each case, that precedes the change. Almost always, there goes from a point of contentment and production to a place of discontentment. And in that discontentment, it causes me to cast my view beyond the agency. The problem is, and I think God uses that within me, because he has steps, like he has a plan for my life, right? Like he has purpose in my life. And I think what happens is he has to allow me to become discontent to see what he's showing me, right? And yeah, so, because I have found, but the problem is when you become discontent, you're ready for change. It's not immediately just going to show up. It may be 3 months, 6 months, 9 months down the road before, and almost always the situation has unfolded and I'm like, this is the right step. And in times where I've pursued things that didn't work out, I was forcing the issue. I was discontent and I wanted change, and I was forcing opportunities that really were not well suited for me.
Yeah.
But over time, because you're out there looking and you're putting yourself out there, you know, it's kind of like when I talk to people that are needing kind of some job advice, I'm like, well, here's the thing. Think of a farmer. Like, we all want the fruit of our labor, but we don't realize how much labor it takes to get to the fruit, right? So before we can, you know, pick the beans, dig up the potatoes, you know, get the ear of corn,
okay,
you got to till the land, you got to plant the seed, you have to weed the garden, and then there's a whole lot you got no control over. You have to let God fertilize it. You have to let God, you know, bring rain. And then you never know what seeds are going to come up. But if you don't throw the seeds out, none of them will come up.
Yeah.
And so I tell people all the time that are frustrated in a career, like, you don't need to wait until you need a job tomorrow to start tilling the land, planting the seed, and wait for the crop to grow. You have to be prepared to say, I'm going to till seed water, till seed water, till seed water for a long period of time. And then eventually it will start to take root. And the longer you do it, the wiser you become in doing that, and you figure out how to do it more efficiently. But it takes time. Things don't happen overnight.
So specifically in like career counseling, where, yeah, it's like, you know, you're guiding somebody career-wise, I operate out of like two mindsets. I want to see like, how you, it seems like you kind of operate, mm-hmm, in the same way. Just if like you have a client who's struggling, my two go-tos are like, what do you care about? What are you passionate about? Is that something that can be fulfilled through a career?
Yeah.
And then what are you good at? Like, yeah, skills and heart is kind of the two areas. Is there anything that you would add, take away, like when it comes to, because some people, they don't have the opportunity to pursue either,
right,
in a way where they're passionate about this, but there's so many steps that it takes to get to that, yeah, or their skill set is not where they wanted to be, yeah, or their skill set doesn't fit the area, or they just can't afford to take a risk.
Right.
And so like there's this discontentment in what they have to do and what they want to do.
There's a few things that, there's a few patterns that I've seen, right? And so here's one principle. Do you want a job that is both it provides you what you need, but is also a passion that you have, right? It's fulfilling. Yes, that's what we call a win-win, right? Because there's lots of jobs that are fun to do but don't pay beans. There's a lot of jobs that make a lot of money, but they suck. And so in a perfect world, you want a job that you love, because what's the old cliche? If you love your job, you don't work
you
a
don't
day.
Work. Yeah, you don't work right? a day in your life.
There's, I mean, a little bit of crap to that. But here's the thing. You do not need to love your job, but if you don't, it means you need a hobby that you do love. If you love your job, that just means your free time isn't as big of a deal. Anybody can do a job they don't like and become good at it, but they're going to need something else outside of that job that fulfills them. Plain and simple. But what happens is people hate their job, and they stay in the job, and then they go home and waller. And they contribute to their misery instead of reprieve their misery. Right? But we can do hard things. We can do boring things. We can do unstimulating things. But that means outside of the job, we need things that are more fulfilling. But what I have found is there's two, when we're talking about dysfunctional kind of extremes, right? Because there's a lot of people that handle career well. But on the extremes, you have emotional people who are unable to stick with a job that they don't like, or that they don't feel like pays them enough, or they don't want to do it anymore, or whatever. They're very influenced by how they feel about the situation. And so what you find is high turnover, low stick-to-itiveness, and perpetual dysfunction.
Is low stick-to-itiveness, is that a word?
It is. It's a clinical, clinical term. It's a doctorate-level term.
Okay, okay.
And so to those people, it's like, you got to figure out how to stop doing that. Like, I guess you don't have to. You don't have to stop. But your ability to gain momentum in life is significantly hampered. Right. But then on the other extreme, you have people who
don't take chances.
Don't take chances.
Yeah.
Right. They're not willing to. And I think part of that comes from it's part of the hangover from the baby boomer generation. Because what you had is, you know, all things equal, survival will trump passion. And so if you go back to World War II and the Great Depression, what we had is a generation of people that were cultivated by a survival mindset, rightfully and understandably. And if we had a Great Depression in 2023 and a world war breakout, the same mindset would surface, because in our DNA, we're built to survive. Way before we want to thrive, we want to survive. And so it's the same mindset I think anybody would have if we lived through that era. But what it did is it cultivated some principles that they live by that says, you get out of high school, you go get a job. It doesn't matter what that job is. You don't have to like your job. It does not matter. How you feel about the job is irrelevant. Go get the job and you work the job. And you work that job. It doesn't matter if there's other better paying jobs. You don't leave that job because you build tenure.
Right.
And then you retire from that job. And over the last 50 years, that mindset has, oh, it's really generational. And so, but it's weakened, right? And so what we've done is, it's not as strong, but there's still those people that feel like this is my, like, stick with it, right? Like, I have this opportunity. I don't like it. I'm not fulfilled, but I'm not going to take a risk. And then on the other end, you have people that all they do is take risk and they shoot their resume in the foot. Because they're not building tenure anyway. They're not building skills. They're not. They're just chasing this mystery magic jobs that they think are going to fulfill them, but they're really not. That's all I got to say. Well, I don't know. What's the next question?
Well, because I think it's beneficial to hear. I don't. So, at the end of the day, giving awareness to what they do is helpful.
Yeah.
But at the same time, neither one of them is going to, like, ruin your life.
No.
But it can alter and negatively impact it in a way. But you just got to manage that if that's the lifestyle that you want.
And some things that I've learned, you know, kind of looking back on the decisions. Because here's the thing. This is one thing I've learned about myself. I play it safe.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that, I think, is just my DNA. I don't really take a lot of risks. And I think God's used me in that. He knows my personality. He knows my tendency. And, like, I'm really happy with my life. I'm happy with my career. I'm happy with my education. I'm happy. Like, I think I've made good decisions to put myself in a good situation. I love my family. I love my wife. At the same time, when I look back, I'm like, man, I wish I'd have taken some more risks when I could have. And so nothing bothered, because here's the thing. You know, a few years ago, there was the popular, like, YOLO, you only live once. And what it was, it was a rationalization to be ridiculous. That's stupid. Because I used to say, it's kind of a dad joke, YOLO, but there's a pretty good chance you're going to wake up tomorrow and have to be accountable for what you YOLO'd today. And so that doesn't mean that we need to live without discretion for our decisions. So it's like, live for today, but set yourself up for tomorrow, because it's probably going to be here.
Yeah.
And so what I found is I didn't take many risks, you know? And I think there's certain times in life when risk can be taken easier. And I wish I'd have capitalized on some of those. Not life-changing risks. Sometimes just life enjoyment risks, right? Like, spend the dollar. Take the trip. Be spontaneous. Because in life, there's certain moments for most people. Like, there's a lot of variables that could change this, right? Like, did you grow up in a family that struggled financially and you did have to immediately hit the job market, right? So this is somewhat of a privileged statement, what I'm about to say. Somewhat. But there's only certain times in life that you can take risks without it being significantly impactful,
mm-hmm.
right? Where you go to college, there's lots of options there. If you choose to go to college, or if you choose to go to the workforce, what job do you pursue? But realistically, the windows of time that are the most flexible are maybe when you're not in school, but you're not in a committed relationship, or have children. You have ultimate flexibility, assuming that you don't have other dependents, right? Like, you're not taking care of your family, you know, you're not trying to care financially, you're not, you know, you don't have debt. Like, there's some assumptions in what I'm saying. But in your early years, generally speaking, you're healthy. Your family is still on the younger side, so your parents may not necessarily be at the point where they're needing a lot of assistance. And so right out of college, like, you can take a little bit more risks with a little bit less being impacted. But the moment you take a job, you have to make decisions that you now have to say, okay, how does this impact my job or my career? Number two, you get married, right? That's a lifestyle change. So now you have to take into account, okay, how does this affect my partner? Right? Then you have children, and that's a life change. Then you have to say, okay, now everything I do impacts my children. What am I going to do about it? And the reality is, could I go and spend 6 months hiking across Europe? Yes. Would it cause me to abandon my family for 6 months? Yes. Would I do that? No shot. That is not fair to my kids or my wife or my finances.
True.
Because I can't do that now, right? Now, at least not without significant impact. So then what happens is we're so anxious to get to this level of have the wife, have the marriage, have the kids, have the career, that we're so focused on it, we lose the, like, pursue that. But don't lose the fact that there's a window of time for you to do something cool if you want to. Take cool. a job in Colorado for a year.
Your statement is, do it before your life is over.
Do it before,
when
no.
you get married and have kids. I'm just kidding.
Do it before,
when you have the opportunity. Yeah.
When you have the, because then on the other end, it's when you get retired.
Right. Because right? that's the other window of opportunity.
Because otherwise, right, is retirement. You know, because at that point, though, you're getting older.
Right.
Because it's like, how many years do I have before my health becomes a variable?
Right.
Or my parents need that assistance. You know, like, right. there's just windows of time. And so it just, and the truth is even once you're married and have children and have a career, still take risks. They just have to be more planned out, right? Like, I take a couple weeks in the summer and we take a cross-country road trip. That is an awesome idea. It's just a lot more moving pieces. It's just a little bit harder. So most people aren't willing to put in the effort to take the action. because it just seems overwhelming. It feels like too much money, whatever the case may be, right?
Fair.
And so to me, it's like, you know, and here's the thing is they took a poll of people in a nursing home one time, and they were like, as you look back on your life, what do you wish was true? What do you wish you could change? And the number one answer was, I wish I took more risks. Nobody said, I wish I saved more money. Nobody said, I wish I, you know, whatever, right? But it nothing bothers me more than when I hear people say, I hate my job. I hate it. But better the devil you know than the devil you don't. And I'm thinking, man, there's wisdom in stability. There's wisdom in staying and putting in the effort to get through the hard times to get to better times.
Right.
There's wisdom in perseverance. There's also foolishness. Because here's the end of the day. We don't live for ourselves, right? We live for an eternal hope, right? And that has to be in light. But at the end of the day, you only live this life once. Once. Do you want to get to the end of it? Do you want to get to be 60 years old, 70 years old, and say, I chose safety even though I was miserable for 30 years because I was scared to jump? I was scared to make the change, to pursue the dream, right? Because it's like, better the devil you do than the devil you don't. You're assuming the other side's a devil. I know a lot of people that have very fulfilling jobs, not because they have doctorates or master's degrees. No, but because they work for companies that value them. They work for things that interest them. They're not willing to be mistreated and underpaid when there's other places that will treat you well and pay you a fair wage, right? And so it's not about educational level. Does educational level maybe give you some additional opportunities? Possibly. It may also pigeonhole you, right? You can still be very successful and fulfilled regardless of education. And so to me, it's like, I don't want to get to the end of my life and be like, man, you spent 30 years hating what you do because you were scared to chase the what if. So you convince yourself that the fear, that the change will be worse. And all you're doing is selling yourself on complacency. And so I say, shoot the shot, man. Take the chance. Right? And if you're listening and you're the emotional person that changes jobs constantly, don't be inspired by my speech. Go get a job and freaking stay there. But for rest of you, this applies.
Border is kind of like, I think of it like the gutter guards in bowling, where it's like, take a little risk, but don't go off the deep end.
What did you say?
The gutter guards in bowling.
Oh, gutter.
Like, set up some guards for yourself so you don't fall all the way in the gutter. But take the risk to where it's just like you're bouncing around. Like, it's okay to bounce around, just don't fall off.
Yeah.
But you also, like, your message was inspiring. Like, I've already applied for four jobs, as we sat here and talked.
That's wonderful.
In Italy. But you're, it's a specific clientele that can hear this and be inspired. What about the people that's already went through and made a decision?
Well, okay, before we say that, here's my struggle. I think everyone wants to feel alive. We want to feel alive inside, right? They call it a midlife crisis for a reason. I think people become complacent, right? Whether it be they're physically unhealthy, they're not happy in their job, they don't feel sexy anymore, whatever it is. And so what happens is, instead of building a life or making changes to our lives that can fulfill us, we become kind of depressed and blah, and then we make high-risk decisions to feel alive. We buy the motorcycle, we have the affair, we try drugs, or we get a divorce, or so we make these high-risk decisions out of this depravity, out of this emptiness that we're trying to get a high off of, and we end up making reckless decisions to feel better. And yes, it may feel good in the moment, but it leads to destruction. That's not the only reason those decisions are made. Don't get me wrong, but I think it's one of the reasons that those decisions are made.
That's a good point.
Because if you're living a life, if you're owning your life, and you're living a life that's fulfilling physically, emotionally, spiritually, and psychologically, then I think you're going to feel less of a need to do something high risk because you're taking care of yourself and you're feeling fulfilled and you're seeing the benefit of that.
Which plays into what you said earlier, which is there's different areas this can pertain to. We mm-hmm. landed on jobs and career because that's what we started out with. But realistically, there's different areas of this that you can play into. If your job sucks,
yeah.
fulfill these areas. Relationally, yeah. spiritually, psychologically, physically, just your health is good. Like, and so you can overall, the overall well-being of life can feel good,
yeah.
even if an area is not going great.
And I think a lot of it takes, there needs to be some humility. You know, we have to be willing to do the hard thing to get the good thing. You know, because I think sometimes we think we're too good for certain things. Like, I'm telling you right now, I have a list of things in my head that if Judy walked in tomorrow and said, you're fired and your license is revoked, you can't counsel, I have a list of like five things I'd apply for tomorrow, none of which are in the counseling field, but I know would provide for my family while I figured out what I needed to do. But it takes a level of humility, and I'm not saying I'm humble because I'm not in the situation. I don't know how I would respond, but it takes this thing to say, you can't think you're better than somebody else. You can't think you're better than a job. You can't think you're better. Because let me tell you something. Being a manager at Waffle House or even just a server at Waffle House makes dang good money.
Yeah.
Right? I can go get a third shift manager, like lead supervisor position at QT, which is a gas station, and make really good money. Most people don't want to make the sacrifice to both their time, their sleep, or their ego.
Yeah. But then in that way, you've switched to what you said, what you mentioned earlier, which I thought was really good. You went to survival mode. Mm-hmm. Survival mode is, this is what I'll do.
Yeah.
Which is just the, like you said, it's a lot of the generational thing where the whole culture and the whole country was kind of in that mindset where go get a job, survive, make payments. We're in the middle of this crisis.
Yep.
Whereas now we're not as much into that, and mm-hmm. you can kind of pick and choose around it.
Because that's the thing is you can provide, even in 2023, you can provide for your family. You can make survival number one and still chase opportunities.
Yeah.
You know, you can still go get a job at Home Depot and work your way up if you work hard. You can go get the job at Waffle House. Then you can become a cook. Then you become a supervisor. Then you can become a regional manager. Right, you can go get a job, your CDL. You can get paid to get a CDL these days. You can become an over-the-road truck driver. Will that take time away for your family? It will. But if time away puts food on the table, sacrifice is sometimes necessary. You can go get your CDL and become a truck driver and make six figures a year. Do you want to do that forever? No, but you can do that for a while.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's opportunities, even if you feel like your back's against the wall. But what it takes is you have to quit looking at the stress in front of you and look at the goals ahead of you.
Yeah.
It's a perspective shift.
And it does go into what we've mentioned in the sense of where you're at in life and just the socioeconomic aspect, the privileged, unprivileged, all that, your demographics. Like, some people are forced into survival mindsets to where it's like, I need to get a job so I can provide.
Yeah.
I don't need to worry about goal chasing right now. Or I don't need to worry about passions that I have. I got to get some money so that we can get some of this stuff going.
Right.
And people are content with that, which is good. Like, it's not a knock on people who don't chase dreams, don't chase goals, don't chase passions. But at the same time, it's this balance of,
oh, here's the thing. If you're
how
content,
do you apply that?
Some people are content with that. That's awesome. If you did go get a job right outside of high school and you're content doing that, more power to you. This conversation is for the people that chose one thing and then complain about it all the time.
Yeah.
They're not content. They're not happy. They're not fulfilled. But they're not handcuffed, but they act like they are.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Trust me, I respect the heck out of people that say, go get that job. They worked there for 30 years. I think that's awesome. If you love it,
yeah.
If there's opportunities, like, do it.
Yeah.
But in 2023, there is less criticism for job hopping than in any year before.
Right.
It is more widely accepted and not viewed as a hit on your resume than ever in the past. And so now is the time to change if you want to. Again, with wisdom, with discernment, and not irrationally or in a way that sets you up. Because I know a lot of people that change jobs because they're miserable, but they go to another miserable thing because they're just trying to get out of a bad thing, and so they jump into another bad thing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, you know, you got to be smart about this stuff. But
so basically, kind of to sum it up and close it out, is like evaluate where you are, evaluate how you lean. Like, do you lean more towards this area or this area in the sense of I can't control myself from job hopping because I'm dream chasing and I'm not going to leave my job even if it's burned down to the ground.
Right.
Find a balance and then see if there is an opportunity present.
That's right.
And then
wait for the right opportunity.
Yeah. Weigh your options. And then if it's not, what other areas in life that you have going on you might feel discontentment at that you feel like even with that same mindset you can apply where you take an opportunity by, and this is one thing that this is not, I'm not going to go down this whole rabbit hole, but long story short, I joined a tennis league last year. This mindset pushed me into the league where it was like, why would I not? And I told Sarah, I was like, I always wanted to get back in tennis. Oh, well, here's a league. Yeah, I've always wanted to get back. And then nothing happened. And I was like, why am I telling myself? Just do it. Like, just join it. Just see what happens. See what's going on. Like, so you can apply this mindset where it's very low risk, where it's like, if I didn't enjoy it, I just quit.
Yeah. That's a really good – this does not have to apply to work.
Right.
Maybe your job's fine or you're not in a position where you can change, but you've always wanted to run a 5K.
Yeah.
You've always wanted to lose 20 pounds. You've always wanted to read through the Bible in a year. You've always wanted to, like, we talk about all the crap we're going to do and never do it.
Yeah.
Pick something you can do and freaking do it.
Yeah. When it's low risk, do it. That's usually what I tell people, whether that's good or bad. But if it's usually rationally low risk, some people think it's low risk is anyway. But if it's low risk, it's like, I don't know. What if I'm not good at it? Who cares? You tried it.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Your 45-year-old self ain't impressing anybody.
Right. Just give it a shot. Go for it.
No.
Try it out. Worst case scenario, you don't like it, you quit. Oh, well, you found out.
That's right. Listen, we're going to stop on that high point.
Okay.
Just Nike, man. Just do it. Hard thing.
It's our new sponsor.
Okay. Since we're at that level. Wear that Nike that they sell in the back streets of Brooklyn that also came
have
from China.
Magazines, yeah.
But not through.
They have magazines of Nike, but really the check falls off after a wash.
The check falls off. There you go.
In the washer.
Anyway, all right, guys. We hope this challenges you, encourages you, doesn't make you make bad decisions, but encourages you to make maybe some risky, healthy ones. So, anyway. All right. Until next time. Y'all behave yourselves.
Holla. Thanks for joining us on another episode of TNJ. Don't forget to check out the links to any of our guests in the show description.
And check out tattoosandjesus.org for additional show information or to submit your questions, comments, or curse words.